Chapter 5. How to Build Coalitions. Many people have forgotten her, but no one did more for women's suffrage in America than Lucy Stone. She was the first woman in America to keep her own name after getting married. She was the first woman in Massachusetts to earn a college degree. She was the first American lecturer in women's rights. She was one of only a very few women who spoke in public at all. She started the country's leading women's newspaper, the Woman's Journal, which was published for 50 years. In 1851, Stone organised a women's rights meeting, but she wasn't persuaded to speak until the last day. In her speech, she suggested that women should ask the government for the right to vote and to own houses and land. Her speech became known for pushing the women's rights movement forward. Her words were read by John Stuart Mill and Harriet Taylor Mill in England, who later published a famous letter about women's rights. After the speech, two other great women, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, joined Stone, and together they worked for women's suffrage. But a long time before they reached their goal, the three women broke apart. In 1869, Anthony and Stanton left Stone's organisation and started their own. Working separately, the two organisations had little success, and the arguments between the three women made many people think women weren't able to be leaders. When Stanton and Anthony wrote a book about the history of the women's rights movement, Stone's name wasn't mentioned. If all three leaders wanted the same thing, why did they fight so bitterly? This chapter looks at how originals build coalitions to reach their goals, and how to solve the problems that can lead to coalitions failing. Coalitions can do a lot, but they can also break apart easily because they depend on people's relationships. We will look at the difficulties of coalitions, at an entrepreneur's battle to persuade people to try her idea, at a Disney movie that almost didn't get made, and at how Occupy Wall Street failed. You will see how building good coalitions requires a lot of work. The important lesson is the Goldilocks theory of coalitions, which looks at the ideas within groups as too hot, too cold, or just right. The originals who start a coalition are often the most enthusiastic people in it, and sometimes their ideas are too hot for others. It's sometimes necessary to cool the message to encourage other groups to join the coalition. The message needs to be neither too hot nor too cold. It needs to be just right. Groups that break. We would expect that having similar goals holds groups together, but very often these goals drive groups apart. Even though people share the same goals, some groups push their ideas further, and these groups are often very critical of those who are less enthusiastic. In one study, vegetarians, who don't eat meat, and vegans, who don't eat meat or any other animal products like milk or eggs, gave their opinions about one another. Vegans disliked vegetarians three times as much as vegetarians disliked vegans. The vegans with the strongest opinions thought that vegetarians were weak. If they really cared about animals, they wouldn't eat animal products like eggs. The more strongly you feel about something, the more you want to show you are different from people who have some of your goals but who don't push their ideas as far as you do. This is why Anthony and Stanton broke away from Lucy Stone. they wanted to push things further. Things got really bad when Anthony and Stanton argued against giving African American men the vote. If women couldn't vote, they said, these men shouldn't be able to vote either. Stone did not agree. She wanted suffrage for African Americans. Anthony and Stanton were very angry. They thought Stone was not serious about women's suffrage, and they started their own women's suffrage organisation. Stone tried to calm things down, but for 20 years their two groups worked separately, sometimes even against one another. Now they were two separate groups, they needed to find new people to help them and form new coalitions. They all found help from an unexpected group, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, a women's group that was trying to stop people drinking alcohol. Men who drank alcohol were often violent with their wives, and their families became poor. But the WCTU members were very different from the women's suffrage groups. They were often women from rich, usually very religious families who did not support modern ideas. Yet the groups managed to work together. Many people across the country disliked the idea of women's suffrage, and it's a surprise that the WCTU was happy to work with groups who were pushing for it. But they did make progress, and in several states, women achieved the right to vote. The following example of a young creative entrepreneur shows how business coalitions can be built successfully. Building and breaking coalitions. In 2011, a student called Meredith Perry realised that there was a big problem with the world of technology. She didn't need a wire to make a phone call or connect to the internet. Everything was wireless, except for one thing. To use her phone and her computer, she still had to connect them to the wall to charge them. She wanted wireless electricity. She thought about things that can send energy through the air, like radio waves, but they wouldn't work well for electricity. What about ultrasound? You can't see ultrasound, and it is silent. Could it be used to carry electrical energy without wires? Her physics teachers said it was impossible. So did ultrasound engineers. A lot of important people told her she was wasting her time. Then she won an invention competition. But as an entrepreneur on her own, with no money, she needed help. 3 years later, I met Meredith Perry. She had managed to get $750,000 from investors, and she had the first example of a wireless charger. It could charge things faster than a wire and over longer distances, and it would be in the stores in 2 years. By the end of 2014, her company, Ubeam, had 18 patents, and investors had given it $10 million. Every single person that is now working for the company didn't think it was possible, she said. Perry had had the same difficulty that all originals have when they want to do something different. Most people don't want to change things. She had talked to a lot of experts, and they all told her about the problems in her math and her physics. In the end, she realised there was a problem with her message. She had been saying, "I'm trying to build something that can send electricity through the air." Instead, she said, "I'm looking for someone to make a part for this new product. Can you help?" This worked. By breaking up the project into parts, she found people who would design those parts. Soon, she had people working on the project. She stopped talking about the most exciting part of her idea, the wireless electricity, because that shocked people. She had moved her question from why to how. Instead of talking about why she wanted something, she talked about how she needed to get there. By talking about smaller parts of the project, she found people who would work with her. When she couldn't find engineers to make a big jump, she found engineers who would take a few small steps. Although it's usually a good idea for creative people to explain why they want to do something, if their idea moves too far from what people think is possible, it may just frighten them away. Coalitions often break up when one group is more extreme than the other groups. Occupy Wall Street started in 2011 to argue against the unequal sharing of money across the United States by the financial center of Wall Street in New York. In 2011, most Americans supported the coalition, but support started to fall as some groups in the coalition became too extreme. Sergio Popovich has suggested that the movement's mistake was to use the word Occupy in their name, which was about people camping in the streets outside of banks and financial businesses. Although many people approved of the general goals of the movement, they didn't like the idea of occupying a place because it was too extreme. In the women's suffrage movement, something similar happened. Anthony and Stanton built a coalition with George Francis Train in 1867. Train was popular, but he was strongly against giving African-American men the right to vote. It was a dangerous coalition that didn't work. The state of Kansas was close to approving women's suffrage, but failed. And African-American men didn't get the right to vote in Kansas either. Later, Anthony and Stanton put together a coalition with Victoria Woodall, who was a woman with very strong views and believed that women should have the right to love who they wanted and, as she said, to change that love every day if I please. This was too much for many people and frightened away some of the supporters of women's suffrage. Many people think that this delayed women's suffrage for 20 years. A recent study by Blake Ashforth and Peter Reingen shows an interesting thing about coalitions. For people inside a coalition, the most important people are the people at the centre of the group. For the Women's Suffrage Coalition, this was Anthony and Stanton. But for people outside of a coalition, the person they notice is the one with the most extreme ideas. In the Women's Suffrage Coalition, that person was Woodall. Enemies are better than frenemies. In The Godfather, Part 2, Michael Corleone says, "Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer." But what do we do with people who are neither our friends nor our enemies? Usually we see people as friends, enemies, or as somewhere in between. Our closest friends support us all the time. Our enemies are always working against us. But in fact, there are also people who we can call frenemies. These are people who sometimes support you and sometimes work against you. Michelle Duffy, a professor at the University of Minnesota, did a study of police officers and how they felt supported, or not, by the officer that they worked with. Not surprisingly, negative relationships led to stress. When officers felt they weren't supported by the officer they worked with, they didn't work so hard and took more time off of work. But what happened when the police officer felt supported by the other officer for some of the time? things didn't get better. They got worse. Negative relationships aren't good, but at least you know what is going to happen and you can be ready for it. But when you don't know whether someone will support you or not, your stress increases. In another study, Bert Uccino found that frenemy relationships like this were unhealthier than bad relationships. People with a lot of relationships that were neither friends nor enemies had higher stress, were unhappier, and found life more difficult than other people. We may feel it is better to keep away from our enemies and to try to improve our relationship with frenemies. But that is probably not the best idea. It's better to keep away from frenemies and try to turn enemies into friends. Very often, the best supporters we have are people who didn't support us in the past, but who have now come over to our side. First, when someone has always supported us, we expect it and don't think it is that wonderful. But when someone who didn't support us starts to become a friend, we like them even more. Second, they will feel the same about us. They've worked hard to beat their negative feelings about us, and now they feel much more positively toward us. Third, and most important, our old enemies are the best at persuading other people to join our movement. They felt negatively about our ideas before, so they understand the people who still feel negatively. And they know why they changed their minds, so they can explain this to others. People will listen to them because they know they weren't always our friends. When Lucy Stone, who was working for both women's suffrage and African American suffrage, walked around towns putting up posters for meetings, young men often followed her, pulling the posters down. Stone asked them if they loved their mothers. Of course. Did they love their sisters? Certainly. She then explained that in the south of the United States, African American men of their age were sold and would never see their families again. She then invited the young men to her meetings as her special guests. Some of these men helped her, and they were very useful when other young men started to make trouble. From unknown to known. In the 1990s, a group of writers suggested something that had never been done at Disney. Instead of the old stories like Cinderella and Snow White, they wanted to write something completely new. Nobody at Disney really thought it was a good idea. The story became The Lion King, the most successful film of 1994, winning 2 Oscars and a Golden Globe. Disney hoped the film would make $50 million. By 2014, it had made more than $1 billion. Early in the project, 5 of the writers had a meeting with Disney management, where they explained their story about lions. Michael Eisner, Disney CEO, Chief Executive Officer, tried to find something he could understand in it. "Could you make this into Shakespeare's King Lear?" he asked. That wasn't really possible. But then, from the back of the room, Maureen Donnelly said, "No, this is Hamlet." Suddenly, everyone understood. The uncle kills the father, and then the son has to kill his uncle. So the film became Hamlet with lions, and Disney decided to make it. Justin Berg, a professor at Stanford University, has explained that the writers had to start with the lions. If they had started with Hamlet, the story would have been too much like Shakespeare's. Beginning in a different place, with lions, made the story more original, but it provided other difficulties. With a completely original story, people very easily get lost. After starting with the original lions, the writers found that Hamlet could help them a lot. For example, they realised that they needed Simba to think about his future, as Hamlet does in his to be or not to be speech. So they wrote a new conversation in the film, where Rafiki tells Simba that he must remember where he comes from. Creating coalitions. Francis Willard became leader of the WCTU after the group began working with the women's suffrage groups. How could she link women's suffrage to the problems of alcohol, which were the WCTU's first interest? Willard didn't talk about suffrage, but about home protection. The idea of home protection was central to many women, especially religious women. Willard used religion a lot in her speeches, and the WCTU supporters liked that. But she also explained that women's suffrage was the best way of protecting women from men drinking alcohol and being violent. To return to the Goldilocks idea again, the idea of women having the right to vote was too hot for some people. The idea of home protection was too cold for others. But when women's leaders explained how women could make things better for everybody, things were neither too hot nor too cold, and soon women achieved the right to vote in a number of states. After 20 years of fighting, the two women's suffrage organisations wanted to work together again. But it was very difficult for Stone to work with Anthony. They had been fighting for years, and the relationship was broken. After 3 years, in 1890, Stone realised it was impossible. She asked her daughter and her daughter's husband to take on the job, and the two organisations did come together. When Lucy Stone was dying in 1893, she whispered to her daughter, "Make the world better." It took another 27 years before women's suffrage was achieved in the United States, in 1920, but Stone had done a lot of the early work toward it.